episode 58 of the Online Chicken School podcast. Today we're trying to figure out if it's possible to hatch only female chickens.
It's time for the Online Chicken School podcast. Whether you've been keeping chickens for years or you're just fixing to get started, we'll help you get your schooling. And now, here's the chicken tenders, Don and Susie.
Hello, I'm Don, the big chicken tender.
And I'm Susie, the little chicken tender. If you're interested in backyard chickens, you're in the right place. It doesn't matter if you have a whole lot of chickens out in the country or just a few somewhere in the city. This is where we share our knowledge, experience, and opinions to help you get the most out of your backyard flock.
Okay, well, I gotta tell you, we were on vacation the time between Christmas and New Year's, like we usually are.
Mm-hmm.
Between that week of fun and then all of January, we had so many things going on this farm.
My gosh.
I mean, it was just one thing after another. And we have so many stories to tell. We can't even put them all in this episode. That's all it would be, is just stories.
Right. Well, and you say that you were on vacation from Christmas to New Year's. I don't think you really took a vacation. It was like all work. I don't think you know how to relax anymore since we moved here.
Well, that's what people don't understand, is that I like projects.
Mm-hmm.
I love my job, but I work in an office, what I call the cave, you know, an all dark room, and I edit things all day long.
Right. Yeah. You're just sitting on the computer.
So to be able to come home and in the evening, on the weekend, and yes, even during vacation, to be able to just be out in the fresh air and build something.
Right.
Or move things around, or even just clean things up, get them organized. I actually like that. You know, it's satisfying for me.
Until the end of the day when you can't move. It always seems like every project kind of like breaks you a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, in a weird way, that's kind of satisfying too. It's like when you're done and you just know you've really worked hard and you're just at that place where you're sore, broken, and you can't move anymore. There's a little bit of a satisfaction that, you know what, I really worked today.
Yeah, you accomplished something. You're now, crazy.
Now, what is not satisfying is when you start on a project and you think it's going to take you the weekend and it ends up taking 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, we've had one or two of those recently, that's for sure.
That's not nearly as much fun.
Mm-mm. Well, I want to say that for Christmas, I got a wonderful gift from Santa of some muck boots. I had bought a really cheap pair of, I don't know if you could call them rain boots, I guess so. And they were like $12 or something at the farm supply store. And those worked great during this last rainy season. But then they started getting little tears in the sides. So then I'd stick duct tape on them or try and glue them shut because I just did not want to go out and spend another whole $12 on another pair of boots.
My goodness.
So for Christmas, I asked on our Facebook page if anybody had any experience with muck boots, because they were having a tremendous sale. And I thought, well, what a great time to get them. And they were cute. They had pink, you know, upper part of it was pink. And, you know, I just didn't have any experience. Like, are they worth the money? And our Facebook fans really gave me a lot of interesting advice, some good advice, and I ended up getting a pair. So excited. They have been wonderful. The number one thing people said on Facebook was that they may make your feet sweat. But you know what? We live here in Florida. We sweat all the time anyway, so I love them. So thank you, everybody, for your suggestions and giving me your opinions.
Well, and there's nothing like looking out in the backyard on a Saturday morning when Susie's out there in her pajamas and muck boots.
I don't know what it is. I love walking around in my pajamas in our yard. It's a sickness. I'm already considered the crazy chicken lady, so this just adds to my persona. Just don't ever take a picture of me.
Okay, well, one story I want to share because it had a happy ending, and it just cracks me up a little bit.
Now it does, yes. In the moment, it's terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. One of the projects over the Christmas break was to do some repairs and replace some rotten wood on a few of our chicken tractors. And this is just part of the game when you build chicken tractors out of non-pressure treated wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have part of your structure is sitting on the ground all the time. And because it's Florida, we get a lot of rain in the summer. And so it's not just on moist ground, but it's sometimes sitting in standing water.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, those parts, the lower parts, they just don't last a really long time if you don't make them out of pressure-treated wood. And so you're going to have to replace the skis once in a while, and sometimes actually a little further up as well.
That's right.
So I had my dad over to help me out, and you're taking the bottom part of the coop off. So you can't have the chickens in there while you're working on it. So we let the chickens out, and they're kind of running around the yard doing their thing, and we're working on the coop. And sort of off in the distance, I recognize that our neighbor, she's outside with her two German shepherds. And she's a very sweet lady. She's the same woman who comes over and watches the dogs and collects the eggs from the nesting boxes every time we go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of hearing her yelling at one of her dogs, but it's not really registering. You know, I just hear her yelling, you know, Dexie! Dexie! And it's just not sinking in. And then all of a sudden, it just does. I mean, it's going on for a while, and all of a sudden, it just hits me. It's like, okay, this is weird. And I look up, and she's kind of looking in her bushes, and then she's looking back over at me across the fence. And I'm like, uh-oh. And there's this big pile of white feathers all across the side of her yard leading up to this one bush.
Oh, my gosh. And I was not home for this, thank goodness. I think I was at the grocery store getting you guys lunch or something.
Oh, by the way, this is on Susie's birthday. I forgot that part.
Happy birthday.
So all I can think of is the neighbor's German Shepherd just ate one of our Delawares.
Mm-hmm.
This is only a month after we had the problem where we lost a handful of our Delawares.
Yeah, they've been through a lot.
And all I can think of is, great, it's Susie's birthday, and when she gets home, I'm going to have to explain to her that we just lost another Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of go over to the fence and she says, oh, Dixie got one of the chickens, you know, and I guess this has never happened before, but the chicken either went through the fence or flew over the fence. They never show an interest in doing that, but apparently it did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, her German Shepherd, his instincts just took over. Actually, her instincts just took over and she just went after it. So I'm thinking, all right, that's one deceased chicken.
Right. What else would you think?
And she just looked horrified. I mean, honestly, I thought she was going to start crying any minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, you know, trying to keep things calm. I'm like, okay, don't worry about it. Let me get on the golf cart. I'll drive, you know, in order to get to her yard, I got to drive all the way down to the street, go up one house and then all the way up her driveway. So I do that on the golf cart and I go over and I say, okay, where is she? And she's like, okay, she's under this bush. And she's just barely holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
She's such an animal lover.
Yes.
And so I reach in there. I see the chicken. I see her butt.
Bare butt.
And I reach in there and I grab her and I pull her out. And then all of a sudden, I just see her head just stick up and look at me really weird. I'm like, well, you're not dead. So I'm looking at her all over. She doesn't have a scratch on her. Not one scratch. But if you looked across the yard, it looked like a chicken exploded. I mean, there were just feathers everywhere.
It is amazing when something gets the hold of a chicken and they just grab at the butt. Maybe that's why God created the chicken to have such a fluffy butt.
Yep.
Because the animal, the predator, just gets a mouthful of feathers and that gives the opportunity for the chicken to get away. Because that's what happened. All those feathers were just butt feathers that he got a hold of and no skin.
Yep. So, I mean, she really lucked out.
She sure did. She ain't going to be walking along that fence line anytime soon.
So anyway, I was relieved and it took me a while to convince our neighbor that she was okay. I'm like, look, she's fine. Mm-hmm. She's really fine. There's nothing wrong with her. She's just going to have a cold butt tonight.
I love when stories end like that on a happy note.
I just could not. I really don't want to tell Susie I lost one of her precious Delawares on her birthday.
That's right. I love them girls.
Well, you asked for it. Here it is.
Okay, well, to start off with, I want to talk about a message we got from our good listener, Lauren. And Lauren wrote, "Hi, Don and Susie. It's with a heavy heart I wanted to let you know that we lost our most friendly girl to what seems like a weasel last night.
Mm.
It dug under the lip of the coop when the ground started to thaw yesterday. Now we only have two left, and we're racking our brains on how to keep them safe. We now know that we need a completely closed-in coop with a bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Hard lesson for us, an even harder lesson for our nicest girl. We're sad to lose our sweet Belina.
Yeah, I mean, that's heartbreaking when you lose, especially your sweetest hen. So very, very sorry about that, Lauren. Don, I know you went back and forth with her, giving her some ideas.
Well, I kind of asked her what her situation was, and she had said, you know, we have the porch available. We could kind of keep them in for a little while. We got a garage. You know, what should we do? And this sort of situation, you know, unfortunately, you have the coop, and you can certainly make modifications to a coop pretty easy. But it's not like, hey, I got home from work on Wednesday night, and I'll just go out and quick slap a floor on the coop.
Yeah, right. That's one of those weekend projects.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if this happens on a Tuesday night, it could be 4 or 5 nights before you can actually get it finished.
And a lot of problems with predators is that once they know where a snack is,
right,
they're going to come back because they're not going to assume that you fixed the problem.
Yeah, you can be sure once they identify a source of food, they will be back. And that's the scary part. You know, you're heartbroken because you lost one of your hens, but you're also terrified because you're like, now, if I go to sleep tonight, am I going to come out in the morning and one or two of the last ones are gone?
And, you know, we wanted to share this message just because, you know, Lauren's not alone. You know, we don't have floors in our chicken tractors, so I don't know if that makes us hypocrites, but we do try and always say that you need a floor in your coop. If we didn't have dogs patrolling the property 24/7, we would have floors in our coops.
Right.
It is really, really important and one of the best ways to keep predators out at night.
Well, and it's not uncommon for us to go out in the backyard and find possums,
mm-hmm.
armadillos, raccoons, even an otter one time.
That was crazy.
All of those things go after chickens.
Right.
And some of those we found very close to the coop,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's the body of it laying there, thanks to the dogs.
Right.
But if those dogs weren't out there, I'd be out there putting a floor in every one of those chicken tractors. It'd take me a while because there's 9 of them.
Right.
But you really have to have that. And that's one thing that always concerns me when we have our chicken classes is because, again, you know, you say hypocrite, but I try and emphasize that a lot in the class. It's like, listen, when we go out and tour these chicken tractors, you're going to see that they don't have a floor. But you need a floor.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have dogs that are patrolling 24 hours a day and people are so nice. Oh, yes, we have the dogs. So you think they'll protect the chickens? I'm like, where does the dog sleep? Next to my bed. No, he's not going to protect the chickens because he has no access to the chickens at night. The
right.
most important time is nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
That's when most of the predators are out. It's not the only time, but the majority of the predators are out at night. So if you bring Fido in at night to keep your feet warm, he can't protect the chickens.
That's right. Yep.
And it's not saying, oh, you need to leave your dog out. I know some people don't like that. That's fine. Don't leave your dog out. But then you really got to make sure that those chickens are secured. You know, here's the test. You want to look at the coop from every angle, every side, every door, every window, the floor and the ceiling. And you want to make sure that there is not any hole in there bigger than 1/2 of an inch.
Yeah, that is a small opening, but you'd be surprised on what can squeeze through or even just what size hand can squeeze through of an animal.
Exactly. I don't want to get too graphic, but you know, the worst case scenario to me is not when the raccoon comes and digs under and gets into your coop.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of nature. What really gets me is when the raccoon will stick his hand through a 1/2-inch hole in your coop, grab a chicken, and then try and pull it out through the 1/2-inch hole.
Yeah, that gets really, really messy.
Yeah, so you don't want to come out to find that either. It's like, hooray, he didn't get in the coop, but yuck.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think the winter time tends to be the worst because during the winter, there are less opportunities for predators. There's just less animals out there.
Right.
And so they become a little more desperate. And as they get more desperate, they take more chances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go into places that they normally wouldn't go.
Well, and they do it at all times of the day, it seems like. In the winter, you'll actually see a lot more chickens being snatched in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, hey, I didn't find anything to eat last night. There looks like there's some chickens over there. I know it's daytime, but I'm gonna risk it for some lunch.
So Lauren, again, I'm so sorry this happened to you. This is really a frustrating thing. Hopefully other people will be encouraged to sort of look at their situation before they run into something like this.
All right, so our next question came through our website. And if you have a question and you're not on Facebook, you can always go to our website at onlinechickenschool.com and fill out a form that I think you labeled it Ask the Chicken Tenders.
That's correct.
All right. Well, Sarah contacted us from North Dakota, and she said, I have set up a nipple waterer system in my coop, but wonder if you have any tips on how to get the chickens started using them. They previously were using a gravity-fed waterer, and I'm currently filling gallon buckets until I figure out how to get them to use the new system.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for the question. And, you know, we use the nipple waterers for all of our chickens.
Mm-hmm.
From the day they hatch until the day they are no more.
Right.
Every chicken on our property, no matter how old, uses a nipple waterer. We love the nipple watering system.
Mm-hmm. We sure do.
It is such a great way to keep your water clean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any other benefits.
I'm sure there are.
There may be other benefits, but I just love that one so much.
Mm-hmm. We don't need to, we stopped looking at that one benefit.
Yeah, sold.
Well, you know, because we start them on there when they're chicks, we train them when they're in the brooder. We tap on the little metal part of the nipple and just tap, tap. And then with the curiosity of the little baby chicks, all it takes is one to come over and tap on it and they've got it. So we haven't in a long time had to train an actual full grown hen.
I think I know what your problem is by your question.
Okay.
The way I read your email is that you put the nipple waterer in there and then you were nervous that they might not use it. So you're putting, you're keeping the old water style in there until they pick up the new one. I guarantee you that will never, ever happen.
Right.
Because chickens will use the nipple waterers, but they much prefer to scoop the water out of a bucket.
Mm-hmm. When we let our chickens out to run around the yard, they've had water in their coop with the chicken nipples. You know, they always have access. The second we let them out, they run over to the dog's water dish.
Yeah.
They all stand around it and then just start scooping out the water that way. They just love scooping water. I don't know why. It's just something they prefer to do.
Yeah. So if you have both in there, they will never take up the nipple system.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to take the old water out. The way they design the nipples, the part that they have to peck on in order to get the water out is chromed,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty brilliant because if you've ever stuck a hand into a chicken coop that had a ring on it,
oh my gosh,
it doesn't take long before the chickens are pecking at your ring and trying to eat it.
Mm-hmm. They love shiny.
So that's why they do that, is so the chicken's curiosity and fascination with shiny stuff. I guess they're all princesses.
Yes, I think so. They like shiny bling.
That will just take over and get them to sort of pick at it, and then they'll figure out that water is coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't want to just kind of leave it to that curiosity that they'll hopefully figure out that that's where their water is going to come from now on. Have them all in that area together. And without the other watering system there, just start tapping on the nipples and water will come out on your finger. And they'll see that. They'll get attracted to that. And then it won't take long. I mean, with the baby chicks, it takes about 3.5 minutes
mm-hmm.
to get one chick over there. And once one of them is over there, they teach all the other ones. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for the question. Now, I hope you're listening to this episode because when you filled out the form on our website, you forgot to put your email address so that I could email you back an answer.
Yes.
And usually when somebody submits a question, we don't make them just wait till they hear the answer on the next episode because sometimes it might not be till 3 or 4 episodes later.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on how we move things around. But I like people to have an answer right away. I don't even want them to wait. Have to wait to like 5 or 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
So we do tend to answer the emails pretty quick. And so if you're going to go to our website and fill it out, make sure you leave your email address so that I can get back to you with an answer and you don't have to just sit around and wait for the next episode.
That's right. Now, Jason is another listener that contacted us through our website and he is from Utah.
And Jason says, I'm a newbie and I'm just a couple weeks away from purchasing my first chickens.
Congratulations, Jason.
My intentions for my little flock are eggs, meat, and good mothers.
The trifecta.
From my hours of studying, I have found that the speckled Sussex is a great dual-purpose breed that fits these requirements. My question is there a good reason to get more breeds? The speckled Sussex is exactly what I'm looking for. And I really would like to keep future chicks purebred. If I get other breeds, won't it be impossible to keep them from crossbreeding?
That's a really great question.
Okay, well, the answer to your first question is not really. I mean, the reason I like having more than one breed is I just like different breeds, and I like looking out in the backyard and seeing different chickens run around. There's just something neat about that.
Mm-hmm.
But practically, is there a reason for that? No, if you can find a breed that meets all your requirements, then you don't need more than one breed. Now, one person might say, you know what? I understand with a dual purpose breed, you get, you know, you have the potential to use them for meat. You have the potential to use them for eggs. That's not good enough for me. I want the absolute best egg layer over in my egg laying coop. And I want the absolute best meat bird over in the broiler coop. Well, then in that case, you're probably going to have more than one breed. But for most people, dual purpose breeds will cover everything that they want to do. And doesn't mean everybody wants the same dual purpose breed, but if you find one that you think is right for you and you seems like you've done your research and it seems like you've landed on the speckled Sussex, a lot of people like the speckled Sussex. Oh, yeah. That's a popular bird here. If that works for you, there's really no reason to have another breed.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And for your second question, you asked if you have multiple breeds, is it going to be impossible to keep them from crossbreeding? Well, yes and no. It depends on how much work and money you want to put into keeping them apart. For us, we, you know, hatch out chicks and we sell them. We don't want to just have only one breed available. So we have multiple breeds so people have choices.
Right now we have three breeds.
Mm-hmm.
And we use three breeds to create four different types of chicken
mm-hmm.
that we sell. But there was a time, I'm trying to think what was the apex there, I think we were at five breeds of chicken at one time.
Yeah, and I think that created, was it seven or eight different types of chicken? Because there's hybrids in there that we were able to create.
Yeah, you know, trying to follow that chart was pretty...
That was intense.
That diagram had a lot of arrows going in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, which is why we simplified. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really hard to keep them all apart unless you do what Don did, which is build nine chicken tractors to keep them all separated.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's what you're going to have to do. You have to have a facility for each breed that you want to keep. Now, facility could be as simple as, you know, a couple birds in a chicken tractor, you know, one male and two or three females on a small scale. It could be as large as I got a big chicken coop with 20, 30 chickens in it. But whatever scale you're talking about, if you want two different breeds and you want to keep them separate and you want to be able to mate them, what you're going to have to do is have double the facility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And by the way, that also leads to double the work.
Really?
Yes. It is a lot easier to care for 40 chickens in one coop than to care for 20 chickens in two different coops
mm-hmm.
or even 10 chickens in four different coops.
That's more repairs you're going to have to make on the coops, more watering, more feeding. You know, it just really multiplies your work. Boy, I wish, you know, now after seeing this question, I kind of wish we only had one breed. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, good luck trying to figure out which of the three you want to keep.
I know. When we had to narrow them down, that was the hardest thing. And I think I got it down to five. It was a real struggle getting it down to three.
Yeah. So anyway, Jason, I hope that answers your question. Definitely possible, but you got to decide whether it's worth it.
Now, Jason is one of our good listeners, and the reason is he went over to iTunes and gave us a really nice review.
That's right. Jason wrote, "I am just a few weeks away from getting my first chickens. This podcast has been a huge help. It is very informative and entertaining. I have learned a lot that should make my experience and my chickens' experience much more enjoyable."
Well, thank you so much for your question and for your review, Jason. We really appreciate it.
Okay, before we get to the main feature today, I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping on Amazon this week, consider going to our website first at onlinechickenschool.com and clicking on the Amazon link over there.
It's going to take you to the same Amazon site that you know and love, and you're going to pay the exact same price for the things you buy, but Amazon will give us a little bit of a commission, and this really helps us pay some of the podcasting bills.
So if you like the show and you want to help us keep it going, just go to onlinechickenschool.com and click on the Amazon link to make all your Amazon purchases. Some of you are doing this on a regular basis. And I think I speak for Susie and I both when I say, we love you.
Yes, thank you so much.
There they go again. More shameless self-promotion.
Okay, for the main feature today, we're going to address a question we received from our good listener, Andy.
And Andy says, I met a lady who is selling pullets only. She said she only hatches pullets and that it has to do with temperatures and amount of eggs in the incubator. Is this even possible? She wouldn't give out much info.
All right, I love this question from Andy because it's one of those things that I knew, but caused me to have to actually go do some research to find out why I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and to verify that I knew it correctly.
Right.
As we discuss this, I'm going to have a way to refer to the lady Andy's talking about. But right. It's not like it's Andy's wife mm-hmm. or his sister. It's not really there's no easy way to refer to her.
Yeah, it's not like saying Mrs. Andy.
Yeah, every time I do this, I can't say the lady Andy talked to. It's going to be a really long discussion.
So we had to come up with a name. So we thought we would call her Brenda the Breeder.
That's it. So when we say Brenda the Breeder, we're talking about the woman who told Andy this story. Okay, first, let's talk about where does this come from? Many, 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 many years ago, man domesticated the chicken.
Thank you, man.
And shortly after he domesticated the chicken, he mated some of them together to make more domesticated chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And after that first batch hatched, they were cute and cuddly. And then about 16 weeks passed. And that man woke up at 4:30 in the morning, listening to some of his domesticated chickens he just hatched, crowing.
All at the same time, for hours.
And that man's wife turned over and looked at him and said, what the heck did you just do? And ever since that moment, other people have been trying to figure out, how do we hatch these wonderful little chickens in such a way that we can get only hens and not those noisy, noisy roosters?
Well, there are many wives' tales out there. I mean, I can't even tell you how many we've heard in our classes where people will say, you know, eggs that are more pointy, I heard those are going to be males, but if they're more rounded, they're going to be female.
There is no way for you to tell which eggs will develop into roosters and which ones will develop into hens ahead of time. The only way for you to figure out which ones are which is to incubate them, mm-hmm. let them hatch, and see what pops out.
Right. But what Brenda the Breeder is referring to is a little different. Now, this isn't about figuring out which eggs are going to produce males and which are going to produce females. She claims that she can cause all the females to hatch by controlling the temperature during the incubation process.
Okay, now this probably sounds like one of those things. Like if you've been around the chicken world for a while, you've heard stories and stories, just fantastical stories about things people claim that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably have developed that sort of, yeah, right, thing every time you hear one of those. You know, you smile. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. And in your head, you're like rolling your eyes.
Well, at first you believe every story and then you kind of go, right. Okay, you know what?
After you've been burned a few times.
Right.
You don't believe anything. But actually, there is a little bit of scientific evidence to back up what she's talking about. So that's why I wanted to talk about this today, because I think this is kind of interesting.
All right. Maybe this should be some child who's listening science fair project. Wouldn't that be something? I bet they get an A.
Okay, well, let's get started. There are a bunch of different theories on how you can control the male-female ratio by controlling the temperature at different stages of development. We're going to kind of try and simplify those down into three that we want to talk about, because these three actually have studies that can back them up to one degree or another. We're not going to bother talking about the ones that nobody can replicate.
Right.
Because there's no point.
Or that have the same results as if you didn't make any changes.
Yes.
If it comes out 50-50, you haven't done anything.
Right. To start off with, hens are pretty darn good at keeping the eggs underneath them at right about 99.5 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did anything. People who are smarter than you and I have done many tests mm-hmm. to see what is the ideal temperature. And surprise, surprise, the hen's chosen temperature happens to be the ideal temperature to hatch out eggs.
Imagine that.
So, for instance, when Susie and I throw a batch of eggs in the incubator.
You never throw eggs in the incubator.
When we carefully set eggs in the incubator.
Thank you.
We set the incubator at 99.5 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that if you turn it up to 101, they won't hatch, but you'll have less hatch.
Right.
The further you get up or down from that number, fewer hatch until eventually you will get to the fact that none of them will hatch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were some researchers a while back that found out that if you kind of move the temperature up toward the higher end, say about 101, you'll hatch out more males than females. And they think that's because as the temperature goes up, you know, some of those embryos are going to just stop developing. It's too hot for them to develop. So they will cease to develop. It seems as if the male embryos can handle a higher temperature than the females can. So more females will die than males will die. It's not 100% across the board. It doesn't give you 100% males.
Right.
But more female embryos will cease to develop than male embryos will cease to develop. And therefore, what you're left with is a hatch that contains more males than females.
Now, obviously, this is the opposite from what Brenda the breeder wants. I mean, she claims she can cause only females to hatch.
Okay, so we're going to throw that one out. I'm pretty sure that's not what Brenda the breeder was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next temperature control theory may be more in the ballpark of what she's talking about.
All right, let's hear it.
This one says that if there is a temperature drop for 3 days that occurs at exactly the right time of incubation, this is not just some random event, like sometime in the 18 days the temperature drops. It's like it's for 3 days and it's at a very specific point during the incubation. This will cause more females to hatch than males. Okay, now you might be asking yourself, isn't this just the opposite of that first theory we talked about? Well, not really, because this one isn't saying that you'll get more females because male embryos died off because it was too cold. This theory is much more magical.
And that's because it says that if you drop the temperatures for 3 days at exactly the right time, like Don said before, then the male embryos will actually turn into female embryos.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
That's magic.
Magic.
Now, this sounds like total hogwash, right?
What?
For one thing, the sex of birds is not determined by temperature.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually determined by chromosomes. In the case of chickens, the hen passes her chromosomes onto the egg, and it's her chromosomes that determine the sex of the chick that will develop.
Go hens.
That seems like a nice, clean, simple answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
While it's true that the chromosomes have absolutely determined what the sex of that chick is going to be, a bunch of researchers in the 90s figured out that if you do the whole drop the temperature for 3 days thing at exactly the right time, you can actually get a few of those to flip from male to female. And even though they stay genetically male, they actually will turn into a hen regardless.
Now, this sounds like Brenda the breeder then may have really stumbled onto something here.
Well, not really.
Oh.
Because Brenda the breeder claims that she can cause a hatch of all females. But the researchers who pioneered this whole temperature drop thing were never, ever able to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
They say that under the best of conditions, they could cause 10% of the male embryos to turn into female chickens. Wow. Only 10%.
That is a very small number.
So I'm not going to make the leap that Brenda the breeder has some kind of inside track into chicken genetics that all the well-funded researchers just were never able to accomplish.
Right.
But there is one other scenario that I want to talk about. Now, I don't think this is the one Brenda the breeder was talking about because she said she changed the temperature of the incubator. But you can also change the male to female ratio by changing the temperature you store the eggs at before you ever put them in the incubator.
Now, for people that don't incubate your own eggs and don't know what we're talking about, let's say you have 5 hens in the backyard and you want to incubate their eggs and hatch out some baby chicks. Well, you don't just one day go out there and grab the 4 or 5 eggs that are in there, stick them in the incubator for 21 days, and boom, you got baby chicks. you want to collect eggs for several days.
You want a big batch.
Yeah. If your incubator holds 40 eggs, you want to get close to 40 because it really doesn't take more energy to do 40 than it does 5, right? You know, I mean, your electric bill is not going to skyrocket. So may as well. More baby chicks than less is what I say. So you collect for a week or two. And there are kind of guidelines on what the best temperature is to keep them at while you're waiting to put them in the incubator.
Right, because the egg won't actually start developing until it reaches a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a high temperature when it suddenly kicks on and goes, hey, let's start developing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's what allows us to do what we do, where it's like collect up a bunch of eggs at one time, and when you've got enough to fill an incubator, put them all in there, and then they're all going to develop at the same time.
That's just amazing.
So ideally, you collect up those eggs, and the best thing you can do is store them at about 60 degrees Fahrenheit until you put them in the incubator. But some researchers found that if you store them at a much colder temperature, like 40 degrees, the hatches will actually develop more pullets than cockerels.
Now, this is not to say that we're going to drop the temperature of our house from 68 degrees, which we normally keep it, to 40 degrees, right? You're not trying to make a play for that, are you? Because I'm vetoing that idea.
No, I think keeping it at the normal 60 will be fine.
Okay.
So the way this thing works is that in that pre-incubation period, you haven't put them in the incubator yet. You're just storing them up and collecting them to put them in the incubator. As it keeps getting colder, some of those eggs, again, are going to no longer be viable. They're going to say, listen, we've been damaged beyond repair by the cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you warm us up, we are not going to develop. Well, it turns out that the male embryos tend to become defective faster than the female embryos do due to the cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is the embryos that actually do develop, more of them are going to be females than will be males.
So that kind of sounds like we're on to something with this situation.
Sounds like it, but not really.
Oh, man, so close.
The problem, again, is that it only makes a minor difference. With any of these techniques, you may be able to sway that ratio by 10%.
Wow.
So the idea that, well, if I do this, now I'm going to get all female chicks. Or if I do this, I'm going to get all male chicks. It's just not a reality.
Mm-mm. And 10% is not a lot. The only way I would think it would make it worth it is if you were some big hatchery, okay? You're doing thousands and thousands of eggs. So if one of these things would give you 10% more females, you know, hey, it may be worth it.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Well, true. On that scale of things, 10% is a large number on that scale.
Mm-hmm.
Try and find a business on this continent that would not be ecstatic if they could increase their profits by 10% this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's huge.
They'd be thrilled. So, yeah, if you're a giant hatchery, this sounds like a great way to boost your profits, right? Less males to get rid of?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we haven't started talking about the side effects to these little procedures.
Right. I mean, in every one of these techniques, you are stressing the embryo in every single one of the eggs. You know, many of them will become unviable. They're going to cease to develop, which means that your hatch rate's going to go down right from the start. And you may have less males, but you're also going to have less females from the same number of eggs. Not a great business plan.
But here's something more important that we haven't talked about. Not only do you get a bunch of eggs that cease to hatch, but you also end up with a lot of chicks that do hatch with various birth defects. Things like crossed beaks, many other issues. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. The chick still hatches, but you're not going to end up with a healthy chick. So now you have all those that you have to deal with. Oh, I've got 10% fewer males to deal with, but now 25% of my hatches have crossed beaks.
Mm-hmm.
What are you supposed to do with that?
Right. So it seems like these techniques are actually going to cause more problems than they solve.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, but this lady swears that she has nothing but female chicks. Okay, maybe she does. But here's the real test. There is an industry out there I like to call Big Egg. And what Big Egg does is take a bunch of chickens. The chickens lay eggs and they put them in cartons and send them to your store.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, they don't have a lot of use for male chickens.
Now, they don't lay quite as many eggs as the females.
Right. So when the hatcheries supply chickens to Big Egg, they only sell them hens.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to all the males?
They go bye-bye.
They're disposed of.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the chicks that they hatch for Big Egg get destroyed.
Right. There is no profit in that.
On the flip side, the opposite happens over Big Meat. Big Meat does not want to raise females for 8 weeks to 10 weeks in order to create meat because they don't put enough meat on their bones.
Mm-hmm.
They only use males. So the hatcheries that supply chicks to Big Meat, they get rid of all the females.
Right.
So you've got one side of the industry that only uses males and one side that only uses females. And if you're a thinking person, you say, can't they get together and them use the females and them use the males? Well, that sounds great, except for the fact that they're not the same breed of chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want the same breed.
Yeah, that that female meat bird is not going to crank out nearly as many eggs as they need.
And that male layer is not going to be nearly as juicy and tender as you want to see when you go to KF Schmee.
That's right.
Now, Big Egg has a giant financial incentive to figure out a way to only hatch out hens.
And Big Meat has a huge financial incentive to only hatch out males.
All right, so why is it that neither Big Egg or Big Meat use any of these techniques of temperature control to sway the outcome one direction or another?
Because they don't work.
Not in any real practical sense.
That's right.
So, Andy, the 20-minute answer to your one-minute question is, yes, it is possible to sway the results, but it's not possible to say I'm only going to hatch out females or only males. And even the little gentle swaying that you can do, it's really not practical. It's not practical in your backyard. It's not practical on the commercial level. It just doesn't work.
Now, the commercial industries are working on a test to determine the sex of the embryo in the egg before you incubate it.
Can you do like a little needle prick into every single egg? This would be done mechanically, not by hand, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You do a little needle prick into each egg, take a sample of the material in there, do a quick test to figure out which ones are male and which ones are female, discard all the ones we don't want, and therefore we know ahead of time that all the ones that go into the incubator are the right sex. Well, that sounds like a lot of work if all they had to do was turn down the temperature for 3 days.
Right, yes. That really tells you something.
I'm going to call this one German baloney.
Debunked.
If it isn't done where there's a lot of money involved,
mm-hmm.
it probably doesn't work in your backyard.
That's true.
So if someone approaches you and says, hey, I got a way that you can make sure only the females in that batch hatch.
Don't roll your eyes on the outside. Just give them a nice little smile and say, bless your heart. Because we all know what that's code for.
That's right. Well, as always, thank you for listening. If you like the show, do what Jason did and go over to iTunes and give us a really nice rating over there. Also, make sure you tell a friend and get them listening.
And if you want to see the show notes for this episode, go to onlinechickenschool.com/58. Well, that's all for today. Talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Online Chicken School podcast. Look for us on the web at onlinechickenschool.com.